Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guests today are repeat visitors, Mr. Yuck and Charles Hondy. On our June 15th podcast, they discuss playing table games with an advantage. Today, they're here to discuss playing machines with an advantage. Mr. Yuck and Charles Hondy, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us back.
We have a question from a listener sent in to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. It's actually about table games rather than machines, which is the gist of our show today. But since our guests go both ways, maybe they'll have something to say about this. Our listener writes, "My question is about buying in at a table. I specifically play carnival games. I know my stakes right now aren't being watched particularly closely, but as I move up, I'd like to know which way is better for buying in at a table. Would it be better to table large denomination chips or a big wad of cash? What would make me look more like a losing player, or does that even matter?"
Well, this is Charles. I have an opinion on this. I never really buy in on the target game. And there's multiple reasons for that. One being, if you are going to be on a game where maybe you're betting large amounts, you don't want to risk a chip fill in the middle of your session, especially if you're playing a game where you might only have an hour or half an hour or whatever. You want to make sure that you maximize the time that you're going to have at that table. And so it might be good to have an idea of where the chip rack stands before you come over to the table. Now, in general, I think heat-wise, you're better off buying in on, say, Baccarat. And, you know, buy in on Baccarat for about the stakes that you think you're going to be playing on your target game. And then if you move over to, say, Crazy Four Poker, bring your chips over. Now, I also think there's a little bit of a vetting that goes on there because you aren't a new player. You aren't something unknown. You're just moving from another table. And if you're especially in the same pit, they already saw you as the guy pittering around on Baccarat for a while. Well, I'm using the word pittering around, but maybe you want to look like you're, you know, seriously playing Baccarat. And then you move over and you just switch games. And that looks normal. And I think that's the best way to also kind of gauge the mood of the pit. If they're relaxed while you are on Baccarat and you move over to Crazy for Poker and they become nervous and demeanors change, then you know there might be an issue here. If everything's the same, then you probably have an indication that there's not much of a problem heat-wise on the game.
In the context of a carnival game, I absolutely agree with Charles. I really don't have anything to add to what he said in the context of a carnival game. In another context, I've been involved with a game which was more of a comp hustle where I'm, you know, basically counting cards but with a really mild spread and taking advantage of a cashback promo, cashback coupons that the casino will send me the next month. And in that scenario, I don't want a fast game. I'm playing as slow as I can, and I'm playing rated, and I want lots of buy-ins. I'm hoping that I drain the chip tray and they have to do a fill in the middle of the session. So I think this is a question where the answer really is it depends. It depends on your specific situation. I agree with Charles' answer that it's better just to walk up to the table with chips in a carnival game scenario, but if it's a comp hustling scenario, I think you're better to actually buy in with cash. And there's probably other scenarios that we could come up with where the answer could vary.
Yeah, I agree. Carnival games, time is money, and so you want to waste as little time as possible. You could get to the table before the dealer that you're interested in and buy in there, but I think buying in on another table is good. But if you were going to, say, play blackjack, and whether it's comps or just counting cards or something where it's not dealer-specific, so you're going to be there as long as you're going to be there, I think the you look the most like a degenerate if you make lots of small buy-ins. You keep running out of money and having to buy in more. But yeah, that wastes way too much time on a carnival game. So,
in a situation which is exactly the same, only quite a bit different, in video poker, when you have like double point starting at midnight or something like that. If it's a you're playing a game where you're going to need to keep feeding cash into the machine, like a situation where you get W2Gs, but they pay you in cash. And so it's frequently a good idea to come to the machine with lots of tickets, maybe on depending on the stakes you're playing, 5 or 10 $2,000 tickets, so that when you're at the machine and time is money, you can just slip in a ticket. It's slipping in all those $100 bills takes time. There is a small casino I play at that after a while they start paying you off in 20s. I regularly get $4,000 jackpots in 20s. It's a lot of fun.
See, I bring my wife with me, and she feeds bills into the machine next to me while I play and generates the tickets. And hopefully there are two machines next to each other so that when the W2G hits, I can just move over to the other machine and play while we're waiting for the for that to get
that
paid off.
That is sometimes available.
So, yes, right.
All right.
And my wife is sometimes available, so there you go.
Oh, well, good to know, but I'm already married. Okay. In table games, players often go uncarded. Playing machines, especially when jackpots can reach $1,200, you must provide identification. So this is a different mindset from playing one side to another. How did you go about going back and forth between those two things?
Wow. There's a lot of similarities and a lot of differences between tables and machines. I guess one of the similarities I'd like to cover first, I'm hoping I can go back and forth with Charles on some of these. One of the myths that a lot of people have as being a professional gambler is that you get to set your own schedule. And I have found that no matter what I'm doing, that that's not completely the case. If you're counting cards, if the casino's too busy on a Friday night, you might not get a seat. If the casino's too dead, you're the only person they have to watch. If you're doing a carnival game, you might have to pick the time that your talented dealer is working. And in machines, the casino gets to decide when they're going to do point multipliers. They get to decide when they're going to do promotions. They get to decide what day they start and end free play giveaways and the monthly mailers. And I'm finding that I have to really optimize my time, I have to set my schedule around all of these different things that are set beyond my control. So I really... there might be more flexibility in terms of setting your schedule as a professional AP than there is in other lines of work, but it's not as you get to set your own schedule as some people might think.
Yeah, I would agree. I think one of the things that I noticed between table games and machines, although I would say there's generally less heat on machines. When you do get heat, it's really bad. And because they will twist it into something way worse than what it really is on machines quite often. And maybe Bob can speak to that a little bit from what he's heard as well. But, the mentality of the casino is you shouldn't be beating me on machines. And if you do beat me, you got to be cheating or doing something illegal, you know, to win money. And so that's what I've noticed is that, the overall occurrences of heat are less, but sometimes when you do get heat on machines, it can be a really big overreaction.
But how do you deal with, when you play table games, I'm assuming you want to be anon, and how do you deal with that if the casino knows you because you're playing machines and they have your ID and your social security number and everything else?
Yeah, I split it up where I just really split my play up, and I have casinos that I just don't play machines at, and then I have casinos where I play machines and just walk by the table games. I don't know if that's optimal for EV. It's probably optimal for reducing heat and not having... I mean, I guess I've missed out on some EV opportunities. That would be an example. I guess the upside of that is that I'm not in any databases. I'm in, there's no database. There's my likeness, my name, my social security number. Everything is clean. So I can do anything I want anywhere in the world.
How have you managed that?
Very carefully. And it's cost me some money. My lifetime career earnings are approaching seven figures. It probably would have been over that had I been more aggressive. But there's been times where it's like, hey, I saw this great game at, you know, XYZ Casino on the Strip and told, you know what, when that game comes to an end, you're in the database. And I'm like, okay, I'll pass. I'm hoping that there is going to be greater opportunity down the line where I can be a completely clean player on everything and make money there than to say I made 40K, but my name and face is now poisoned for, you know, whatever.
But you've been barred many, many places for playing table games, right? I mean, and they never have managed to get your name or your...
I have played places where... they have my name, but I know that they are not going to do anything except internally, and I'm okay with that. I have played.
How can you know that?
A heck of a lot of research and talking to other players about what happened.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much you know which places are going to put you into Oregon Surveillance Network. I mean, there's a list, and you know.
Yeah, and there's several databases out there, and. That's why somebody will say, okay, I found this great carnival game that, you know, like I said, on the Strip, but they'll be like, well, you're going to end up in the Biometrica database that casino reports to. So if you play there and they figure it out, you're in there. And I've walked away and haven't played. And that's cost me some money short term. And I'm thinking that long term it'll pay off, especially I think internationally where you just don't have much of a choice. I know players that have gone internationally and played where you just passport is required to enter the casino and bang, before they can even play a hand, they're done. And so I've consciously made the decision to walk away from value that I could have immediately in gambling that I will make more money in the long term. And, you know, I'm hoping that's still paying off. But right now, yeah, I'm completely clean, so I can play anything I want on machines. And so many casinos rely on those stupid databases. Just if your name's in there, you're no good. If your name's not in there, you're fine. And probably because of lack of skill level evaluating what a player is doing on both machines and table games. It's just a crutch they've come to rely upon. And that's like what Mr. Yuck was saying. You know, some databases, like the casino he had, realized it is so full of just crap and people that were, you know, never a threat to them, that it becomes worthless and rotten, and they'll send him a letter inviting him back because they realize that this database of all these rotten, no good players are, you know, 75% of our customers. So, you know, or, you know, something to that effect. Anyway,
what about you? I mean, you, I'm sure, are in some databases, right? And
yeah, I can think of maybe two or three situations where the database has really cost me and gotten me backed off somewhere earlier than I would have otherwise.
Has that ever leaked over into your machine play where they don't want you as a machine player because they found out you were in one of the databases?
To the best of my knowledge, no. I don't know of any situation.
I haven't had that happen.
One of the things I will add...
I have.
Charles commented on how, you know, machine backoffs where they assume you're cheating can get really ugly. And I've fortunately not had that happen to me where, you know, it involves the police, arrests, and, you know, where they really fly off the handle and go off the deep end. I have found that machine backoffs or machine countermeasures tend to be a lot more subtle and a lot less personal. When you're playing blackjack or any table game, you've got a dealer watching every hand you're playing. You might have a pit boss breathing down your neck. And if you're betting big enough, you might be the focus of attention from surveillance. So there's a lot of people involved always watching what you're doing, especially if you're doing something different from what they would expect a normal civilian to go in and do. When you're playing a machine, you're doing what they expect you to do. You're not doing anything out of the ordinary. Most of the time you're playing a game, you're playing a negative EV game and expecting to get that EV and then some back through some sort of offer. And the way machine heat tends to come is they'll pin lock you. They'll stop sending you mail. They will just somehow cut off your offers and
they'll send you a registered letter.
I have gotten one of those, which was kind of funny because in that letter it said they're cutting me off my slot club benefits, but I can still play slots, and they actually invited me to play blackjack, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But usually there's not a human being involved telling you to your face, you can't play here anymore, you're not wanted, whereas on blackjack there is. And usually the signs on machine play, you pretty well know when your time is up. And I just, when one or two of those heat signals comes on a machine, I decide, well, I'm just going to go into cash out whatever I can from this place and just end it. I don't let it escalate to the point where it's going to really get ugly.
Yeah, I also want to say, when you're talking about having sort of massive heat for machine play, that, to me that's really, really rare, and the vast majority of the cases that I'm familiar with where that's happened, it's because of having a player's card in somebody else's name, you know, where you're picking up free play for somebody else or whatever. You know, a couple of years back, some people went kind of crazy with that, and you know, a lot of heat came down. But I don't want people to think like, oh, I'm going to get, you know, arrested because I, you know, play video poker.
Yeah, I can't say this is 100% the case, but I would assert that in most cases where there's an arrest involved with a machine play, you could have seen it coming. There would have been warning signs ahead of time.
Well, the other cases are the ones like the guys in Arizona with the donkey that they thought was a computer. You know, it's a case where the casino has screwed up so badly on the amount of money they're giving away that they can't believe how much suddenly a guy has, you know, $100,000 in free play or something.
Yeah, that case I think would be kind of the exception to the rule. Yeah. Where, you know, those guys, yeah, they had no way of seeing it coming unless they somehow knew that the amount of money they were winning was going to cause that kind of overreaction.
$100,000 of free play is something I've never had, but there have been situations where I've had $8,000 or $10,000 of free play, and the casino goes, they really messed that up, so they're going to limit you to $50 a day collecting your free play.
Yeah, online casinos do that kind of shit too, where you basically it'll take years to cash out your money from the online casino because they're gonna, and you have to go request it every single week, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing. I want to disagree with what Charles said. If we're talking video poker, they come with royal flushes, which are 4,000 coins. But they happen every 60 hours of play on a single line game, something like that. So you can be up two or three royal flushes at a particular casino basically by luck. Exactly when royal flush, there's relatively little skill in hitting the royal flush.
I push the buttons really good.
The skill is basically how much you lose between royal flushes. And good players are going to lose less. And so casinos will let you, they're used to people hitting royal flushes and getting upside down quickly. More so in video poker, I think, than in table games, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, but carnival games are like that. They're used to people.
Are there 800 to 1 payouts that you get every 60 hours or so?
Not 800 to 1, but
that's what a royal is.
Yeah, but there are big, but you're betting a lot more, right? So there are big payoffs in carnival games where you hit 10,000 or whatever, and they happen frequently enough that the bosses don't freak out just because somebody hit a big payout on a, you know, on a carnival game.
All right. Scratchers. Scratcher is something that you frequently get if you hit a certain four of a kind or some other jackpot. There's lots of scratcher promotion. It's a good time to bribe a change girl, but I don't do that anymore. Now, Mr. Yuck, you had a scratcher promotion which you had fun with.
Yeah, so this particular casino, best game, I think, was 99.7% return, and their base slot.
Sounds like Deuces Wild.
It might have been. It might not have been. I'll tell you after the show.
Oh, it could have been Super Double Bonus.
It might have been. It might not have been. I'll tell you after the show. But it returned about 99.7%, and their base slot club was a third of a percent, so you could pretty much walk in there any day and break even. I usually played the three times multiplier days, and they have these scratchers, and I believe, what was it, 300 coin in earns you a scratcher, and the scratcher, the average scratcher would get you $9 of free play, so it's about 3%.
Ooh!
Now, the months leading...
How big games did they have?
Dollar single line, so... You know, a dollar single line.
You're still getting 10 or 12 or 15 of those an hour.
Yeah, and you're making, I figured it was about just under $100 an hour on the game. Now, when they started these, they limited you to five a day.
Okay.
I was like, okay, well, I'll go in on the multiplier day when I'm going to play normally, and I'll earn my five scratchers, and I'll put in my normal coin in to maintain my ADT. But I'm not going to make a point to go and play this thing every day and, you know, just 1,500 coin in, which is the max, and trash my ADT and trash my monthly offers. It just, the net for me was to maintain a high ADT and keep my monthly offers going. Well, one month they decided to waive the five scratcher limit, and they decided to go unlimited.
Oh.
When I walked in there. And my first thought was, well, I wonder if they're the same scratchers. Are they the same? You know, are they still going to be an average of $9 each? Most are five, some are 10, some go up above that. But I earned my first five and went and collected them, and they all looked to be the same. And it was a multiplier day, so I just played a lot longer than I normally would. And their whole setup for these scratchers was pretty cumbersome. You had to go to the kiosk, and when you earn your first scratcher, it says scratcher number one. You hit it, and it prints out a slip of paper. Then you have to hit scratcher number two, and it prints out a slip of paper. And it does that for every single scratcher. And after about 60 slips of paper, it stopped giving me more. I think I'd earned 80 to 100 scratchers at that point, and it stopped at 60. And then you have to go and sign all 60 of these slips of paper.
So in that case, it was
your
good.
Your hourly win rate is going down.
Yeah. Then you got to go wait in the long line at the Players Club where everybody else is redeeming their scratchers. And you get to the front of the line, you give them a stack of 60 slips of paper that are all signed, and they're like, oh my goodness, what's going on here? And then you tell them, yeah, and it stopped letting me print them because I should have 80 by now or whatever it was. And they, you know, had to get somebody, they go out and look at my play.
That's time to call the manager.
Yeah, they did, and they worked it out, and then they give you your 80 scratch tickets, and you have to scratch them in their presence. So you take the penny, and they're scratching. I mean, the whole process was just, it's like, this thing can't last.
Meanwhile, there's 52 people in line behind you by now.
Yeah. So, anyways, I came back the next day knowing that they're not going to keep this thing going the whole month like they planned. They'll countermeasure it at some point. As it turned out, they let it go for the entire week. At the end of the week, you could take your used scratch tickets and put them in a drawing. Fortunately, I wasn't able to be there for the drawing, which, I don't know, may have actually been a good thing. But the next week after they did their first drawing, they went back to the limit of five. But then they did some other countermeasures, and it kind of impacted Charles.
Well, they ruined all my favorite Keno games. And no, not really. They had Keno on the same platform as the video poker on all of their machines in the casino. So they doubled the coin requirement to earn points for all of those platforms. So they already did one countermeasure. They could just limit the scratchers or do something there. But classic casino overreaction for the entire casino on those platforms, they doubled the amount of coin in you need to earn points, including all the Keno players in the casino now had to put twice as much Keno action through to get the same amount of points they were earning before.
And these are like 90% Keno games.
Yeah, they're like 90% Keno games, and you really are doing the classic casino mistake of stepping over a quarter to pick up a dime. You don't have to beat every single player to be profitable. Table games alike, too. There's all this time and energy spent about how to stop people from winning anything to the point where you're way suboptimal on what your overall profit would be. You don't have to win money from everybody who walks in. You just have to win the optimal amount of money from most of the people that walk in.
And it's worth pointing out, this particular casino, I would guess that probably 80% of the players on these machines are playing Keno.
Yeah, so it was just a disservice to their
customers. Of course,
all of customers.
Those players are probably still playing Keno and just getting half as much, right?
And probably didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem is some casinos take it personally when you win money. They really do act offended, and they just lack the education and training to even know how their business really works. I've asked people before in the casino industry, how does the casino make money? Do they just get lucky? Do they, get up and then close the doors for the rest of the day to lock in a profit, like you think you would do when you played? And they really can't even explain to you how a casino makes money off of people. They have never really even taken it to that next level up thinking to think of it more than that. And
yeah,
so
they have this attitude that if it's good for you, it must be bad for us. They can't imagine a world where it's possible that there are players that can have an advantage, yet it still could be better for the casino. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. If they wanted to make it so you couldn't win anything on machines, let's make all the video poker payouts 95% and give no comps. And you know what? You still might lose. You'll figure out a way to lose, maybe. But for the most part, you're not going to lose any money to people, to advantage players. But you're obviously, it's way suboptimal to operate your business that way. You're not going to be profitable. And the casinos that go in that direction are the least profitable, and smaller ones close when they start going in that. When you start walking into a casino and you see every blackjack game is cut in half for anybody who walks up, that's usually the first sign that we've seen that casino is on the death watch list,
Yeah, well, that's what they've done here in Las Vegas, but in their minds, they've made up for it by gaining revenue from restaurants and clubs and shows and hotel rooms, But they're running the casino parts of it so suboptimally that, and they sort of blame it on, well, millennials don't gamble, or whatever,
Well, when did millennials ever gamble? When did anybody, when did 22-year-olds ever comprise the majority of revenue for Las Vegas? They never did.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of video poker games that so far do not have off-the-shelf software available. Quick Quads was one of them, or Ultimate X. And there's lots and lots and lots of these. For many players, that makes the games unplayable at the AP level. Is analyzing these games within your skill set? Do you find opportunities in that area?
It is within my skill set, but I've never found a game at a casino where there isn't another option available. Like, I might know that there's a 99.9% Ultimate X game, which I believe now does have the strategy published, but at the time, you couldn't find it. But I'll go ahead and play a 99.7% game that does have the strategy published and not spend the hours upon hours it's going to require to do the full analysis to get the 99.9%. The other issue is...
You could come to my class on it, though.
I could, but you're not going to teach me how to hit lots of royal flushes, so... the amount of effort required to get that extra 0.2%, and if I make one error, just one small error in my analysis somewhere, I might lose that 0.2%, and if there's no other basis of comparison, I can't be sure that I have the strategy nailed completely perfectly when I come up with a system. So there's not a whole lot of video poker plays where I've independently analyzed it. I can think of one game that I've sort of independently analyzed, and I used certain features of Video Poker for Winners to do that. I looked at the I found a similar game on Video Poker for Winners, and then updated some of the hand frequencies for a hand composition that Video Poker for Winners didn't support, but I was able to tweak the frequencies of that particular hand and come up with a strategy that's pretty close. The game returns, you know, anywhere from 103 to 105%. So if I'm off by a half a percent or so, I really don't care.
Yeah, and you'd see that on every street corner, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to let Mr. Yuck sell himself short on this. He's analyzed multiple games that people didn't think to analyze and didn't look closely enough. Just what you were talked about before, where, you know, you look at something that you might normally pass by and you look at it a little bit closer, and he's been able to run analysis on things that I haven't heard anybody else doing on, you know, games that you might, you know, like Kitty Glitter or something you might normally pass by or not think much of, and he's been able to at least come up with numbers to say, yeah, this is interesting, or this is not, or it's really profitable, we should play this before somebody else figures this out.
Scouting. How is scouting for table game opportunities similar and or different than scouting for machine opportunities?
I'll answer that one first, I guess. There can be a little bit of heat in table game scouting, actually, if you do it lazily. I've been able to pick off scouts just walking around the first 3 minutes they entered the casino and going, okay, who's this guy?
Actually, you know, for any of our listeners that are recreational gamblers that think that this is crazy, that you can get heat just for watching a game, try going up to a roulette game in a strip casino and whip out a pad and just stand there and write down the numbers for about 10 or 15 minutes and see if security doesn't come and tell you to move along.
Yeah.
And it used to be that they would send limousines for guys who did that, right? They loved those players, but yeah, not anymore. They're so paranoid about players.
And if you want to back off, if you want to experience a back off, all you need to do is walk into the Mirage, put a pad, you know, go in front of the double deck game and start scribbling on a notepad, and you'll probably get a tap besides just telling you to move along. And then you could say, gee, I've been backed off at the Mirage.
But back to your question about scouting for Video Poker, you know, for me, that's very difficult just because I don't have pay tables memorized and I don't know tons of games, and there are so many freaking games on the...
There are.
I don't know enough about the game. I'm sure that more experienced players can just look at certain machines and go, I don't need to bother with this type of machine or that particular game because there's never going to be a pay schedule on that game that, you know. So for me, it's really difficult to...
Yeah, I think it's become... Well, my wife is upset with me because now when I go into a new casino, it takes hours before we're out of there and I haven't done shit, you know. And she's so pissed because it's like, what are you doing? And you know, when you build up a portfolio of skills, I guess you'd say, or knowledge, it's like, well, what about this? And I got to check this, and I got to check this. And then, okay, I'm done with table games. Let me go look at machines and Video Poker, and like, well, what do they have other than Video Poker that might be interesting that I haven't seen before? And, you know, and by the time you get done with everything, scouting is a really long process nowadays, you know, compared to card counting days when you're like, oh, is the table open? And can you surrender? You know, stuff like that, you know, and that's it. And so, it's become a lot more complicated nowadays for me anyway.
Yeah, the other thing with the machines, it's not just the pay schedules on the different games. Now, when I first started, I started probably like everybody. You learn 9-6 jacks, and then you learn deuces wild. And I tried to memorize at least one new pay schedule every trip until I have my current portfolio. And some trips, you know, I was able to memorize another two or three. But you after you've done it a while, you get pretty used to what all the pay schedules are. But it's not just what the return of the machine is that has to do with video poker and machine scouting. There's also the slot club. And
let's do that one separate.
Do that one separate, sure.
So stay with the scouting of the games. There are in video poker. There's games like All Star Poker or All Star 2, and on this one machine, there can be 300 games. And
Three play, five play, 10 play,
and then Ultimate X, and then Quick Quads, and then there's like all these variations on them.
Yeah.
And a lot in many casinos, the best games are on these All Star Poker games.
But the other problem is that you could have two of the same machine that have different pay schedules on the same game.
That does happen, but in most casinos, side-by-side machines, like an All-Star Poker, will have the same. Not guaranteed, but when you find a difference, it's gold, but they're frequently the same.
Yeah, and I'll add on top of that, if you want to just go around and look at progressives, it's not only, you know, you see something and you see a four-way progressive and you're like, okay, how the heck do I quickly do the math in my head of, the four of a kind is worth this, that should be this, I'm going to add a couple percent for this. And then if you want to go a step further on a long-term scout, well, what does the thing reset at? I know what it's supposed to reset at, but what does it reset at when somebody actually hits it?
Well, and you have to check what it moves, too.
And you have to check the meter and say, well, what sort of meter does it have on it? Now, I've ran into games before where it's like supposed to be 800 and then it's up to like, 2000, 2200. I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. Let me maybe sit down and play that, or I'll check it again. Maybe the others aren't enough where it's positive, but I'll check it later. And then I watch somebody hit it and it goes to 2000. And I'm like, wait a minute, that only went back down to 2000. I'm like, there's something going on here.
Sweet.
And yeah, sweet is what you call that. And so those are things that you, as experience goes on, that you would not have thought about initially. And now you think, well, let me just check for that, because 99% of the time it's going to be nothing. But the 1% that you find something like that, it's worth a lot.
Do you find that you find more of those kind of opportunities where they're resetting wrong or something like that in the smaller out-of-the-way casinos or do they show up in Vegas Strip casinos?
I have mostly seen that in tribal casinos, smaller casinos, places where they're moving machines around a lot. They're maybe opening a new section or a new facility even.
They don't have to get permission from the gaming control board to change pay schedule.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And then they went in there and they just did a half-assed job of setting it up and didn't, really do their due diligence on what things should be. And in that particular situation, I guess I'll tell the story. Analyzed the machine and found out that, hey, wait a minute, this is 103% return perpetually. I mean, forever, so nobody was playing it. Nobody professionally or even AP-wise was playing it. And so we started playing it, and it turns
out... How much could you bet on this?
It was just a dollar...
single line.
Single line machine, but, I think the reset was at 3%, and then it got better from there, so you could get up 6%, 7%. So you could get, a pretty good edge on the deal. And so I was kind of milking it along because, I would hit it, and then I would... you get a W2G, and I'm like, okay, now they're going to figure it out. They're going to go, what the hell is this thing? And they never did, And it's like, okay, but let me not win too much on it because I'm the only one playing it. I can kind of control that. And so I'll come back the next day, or I'll come back wherever. And it was in a place where actually I could have been there months at a time. And I was, I played it for like a month. And then two people from Vegas showed up. And it turns out they found out about it, not because they had scouted it, but somebody who was visiting saw it and posted it online.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, really? the upside to you was what? To post that online? You know, other than, you know, I guess a pat on the back and thanks. And so then two pros were down there. And then it got removed. So as far as I knew, you know, these were the only two pros that knew about it. And it was a guy and a girl. And so
two pros know about it and the world knows about it.
Yeah, I had thought about doing something. I don't know what the ethics of this, because I tried to work with them. And I was like, you know, I've been trying to milk this game. I think it's the best way. And they're like, we're going to play it until it's gone. And I'm like, man, all right. You know, now you're my competition. You're not really my, you know, I at that point, I don't know if an AP is still on my side or not, because they basically said, we're going to make money before you can. So that's kind of like, you know, more of like being a casino in my perspective than they are a fellow AP. They're not cooperating with me, and they can, because there's not a group of whatever. I could understand it if there's a group of 10, but it's just me and them. And thoughts had crossed my mind, like hiring my buddy in a suit to come by and going, hey, tap, we don't want your action around here anymore. And they would have known exactly what was happening, and they would have skedaddled. And I was like wrestling what the ethics were of doing that, because it really would have maximized my profit. And it turns out by the end, if I had done that early, maybe, because everybody there at the end were all their friends. You look and they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them all, you know, together that were playing on the bank until they just basically, you know, shut it down and gone from there.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. And I have the situation that is somewhat different, that I'm better known than you are in the player, in the machine world. So if I am playing a machine that I have found personally, then within a day or two, somebody is going to come by and say, why is Bob Dancer playing this machine? He's got to go to sleep sometime.
Well, yeah, and the same happens to table games players, too, and I'm sure it's happened to you. You find a table game, and people see you playing it, and then suddenly they're like, why are they playing that game? There must be a way to beat it, you know?
Yeah, they need to say, who's that guy in the clown suit over there, that, you know, playing that new game or something like that, but...
All right, so Mr. Yuck started to talk about slot clubs, and I cut him off for a few minutes, so I'm going to apologize for that. Now, slot clubs obviously are important. For me, I live here in Vegas, and 90% of my play is in Vegas, and it takes a while to learn what the slot club is about, including talking to other players who play stuff like I do. Now, you're a road warrior. How do you find out about slot clubs?
It's a lot of experimentation. You just have to try things out and see what they're willing to give you. I usually start out online. I go to the casino's website and I see what information will they give me. And they usually tell you that, you know, 100 points is worth a dollar of free play. Or, keyword or, not and, $1 coin in earns you X number of points. They give you half the information you need to actually be able to calculate the percentage return that you're going to get from free play. So, and, you know, I found that if you go up and ask somebody, if you ask your typical boothling, you're talking a foreign language to them. They know the piece of information that's on the flyer, but they really don't know the other piece of information that you're asking, and you really look more intelligent than you should when you're asking them the question. So I usually go to a place, I look at the denominations of their machines, what's their highest denomination machine, what are most people betting, and I try to, you know, is this a place where 10,000 coin in is probably going to give me their top offer, or do I need to run 50,000 or even 100,000 coin in to kind of test the waters out? And you know, I just sit and I play and I see how many what the point accrual rate is, and then after I've earned a few points, then I might go to the slot club and say, hey, I've got 10,000 points, what can I get for this? And then do the math that way. And once I feel I've done an appropriate amount of coin in or for that location, you just have to wait a month or two and see what shows up in the mail. It's a lot of trial and error. Some places you really don't make money. You might barely break even or even lose. It might be a negative EV play. But most places you're going to come out at least a little positive, and you might run into a gold mine that way.
Do you find VP free useful at all, or...?
Not at the remote locations. I will look at VP free, and occasionally there might be some game in there that I overlooked when I scouted that I just didn't notice. But for the most part, especially in a less traveled area, VP free is not current, and I kind of like it that way.
And they're actually talking about VPfree2.com.
Yeah, I'm sorry. VP.
Yes, where they have the listing, the catalog of all the games.
Yeah, I find even in Las Vegas, it's not current.
That doesn't surprise me. Although I know that it's going to be a lot more current in pretty much anywhere in Nevada and heavily traveled areas, sure, than remote areas.
Yes, well, it is maintained by volunteers, and sometimes you do definitely get what you pay for. And there are some of the monitors who have their own reasons not to make it accurate information. Some of it is based on their abilities to discern this information, and sometimes it's based on what they don't want you to know.
Well, and quite often, if it's information they don't want me to know, if I go and scout the casino, there's a good chance I'll figure it out anyways, and it's not information I would want everybody that browses the site to know. So I think it's good that there are people that use discretion. I would have a bigger problem with people that don't have discretion, like the guy that traveled through the casino that Charles was talking about where they reset the jackpot to the wrong amount. The guy that went and reported that gained nothing and kind of ruined a play for the person who was milking it.
In Vegas, there's a group of people who play similar games and denominations to what I do. And sometimes I can talk to them and saying, how much do you get a month and what kind of coining do you give them? Now, this is done on a quid pro quo basis. This is... But if you're a road warrior and you don't really know anybody at this target site, it must be a lot more difficult to get this information.
Well, and you're probably hoping that there is no one else playing there, right? You're going to find the best stuff if there is no one playing it.
Yeah.
But what makes a good video poker game is not a big secret at most places.
I mean, the other problem, too, is... do you really want to be camped out in a Motel 6 in Pahrump for a month at a time to play video poker? I mean, to me, that would be a living hell, right? Playing video poker for 10 or 12 hours a day while going home to a Motel 6 in Pahrump, that'd be, yeah.
Yeah, gambling for a living isn't always as glamorous as everybody thinks. And you have to make those lifestyle decisions. I was talking to someone else that I know that was very successful in a period of time, and turns out, he spent a year and a half of his life driving around Iowa. And I'm like, well, I can make the decision that I might have missed out on some money, but I didn't miss out on things in my life I want to do differently during that time or than that.
The last solo trip that I made was to Iowa in the middle of winter, and I was like, what the hell am I doing here? Why am I doing this? So it would have been a lot better if I had had a teammate with me,
But, yeah, I tried the sightseeing excuse the first time I was in Iowa and quickly got shot down and called out on that when I tried that in Iowa. So it's there are some places that aren't too exciting to be where they might have opportunities, and you have to decide if your life is worth being there.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about traveling and being in a remote location, if you're there long enough, you will eventually, if there's anybody local playing the games, you'll eventually find them. And sometimes, I might just ask a ploppy that's betting about the same stakes I am. It's like, hey, have you ever played at such and such casino across town? Yeah, how much free play do you get from them in a month? And usually they'll, you can get information kind of informally that way, not from another AP. And then there's one place where I was sitting there playing. I was on point multiplier day, and I heard some buzz next to me, and it's like, oh yeah, I got to go to this casino other town. I got to pick up free play. Now, a ploppy never goes to a casino to, quote-unquote, pick up free play. That's some sort of at least half-sharp player doing that. So that clued me in that that casino that they were going to is probably a place I need to go and look at.
But the amount of free play a local gets is may have very small correlation to the amount of free play an out-of-towner gets.
Yeah, but we end up becoming locals.
Yeah, when you go play an out of the way casino like that, is your standard operating procedure to sign up as a local and get a P.O. box?
I can't tell you how many P.O. boxes I have.
You can't tell us or you won't?
Well, I can't count that high.
Okay, now, machine play includes slot machine progressives. As a personal,
Wait a minute. You know what? I just want to stop you for a second because I just learned about something, and you're saying you have all these P.O. boxes. I just learned last week about this service that the post office has. I'm assuming you're aware that they will scan every piece of mail for you and send it to you as an email so you will know what is coming in your mail that day. Okay. So if you have, you know, a lot of P.O. boxes, this is a great service because you'll just get a lot of emails that will tell you what every piece of mail is in those boxes.
So. Oh, yeah, okay. That's a good thing to know.
It's called informed delivery, and it's free from the post office.
Now, if it's a mailer that, say, is four pages where they actually have to unseal it and open it up and there's useful information as to how much, what your calendar is, and when you pick up stuff, will they actually unseal?
No. All it shows you is the face of the piece of mail. So it'll show your name and address, and, you know, you'll see the return from where the mail is from. But if you're waiting, expecting mail from a casino, at least you know it's there. Or if you hadn't had mail in a long period of time and suddenly a mailer arrived, you'll know.
Yeah, I know the UPS store guy is going to really appreciate that because he's pretty tired of me asking him, can you tell me what the next piece in this and this and this and flip through my mail to let me know if I got anything really important?
All right. Before we talk about slot machine progressives, we're going to take a brief break, listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Mr. Yuck and Charles Hondy.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Throughout June, there's a half-price gas and or food promotion. Earn $50 Chevron and or $50 Smith gift cards for half price for points earned and redeemed in June. Usually 8,333 points is worth $25 in cash or free play, but in June, it's worth a $50 gift card. Maximum 10 cards in any sort of mix between Chevrons and Smiths. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will be on Wednesdays at noon beginning August 2nd and last until October 4th. The schedule is posted on bobdancer.com in case you're going to be in Vegas sometime in that interval and want to attend. If you're at least 21 years old, you're welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is 100 Play with Quick Quads. This is a fun game to play. Quick Quads by themselves are very interesting, and 100 Plays, you're getting them all the time. I've not seen these machines with good pay schedules. If I did, I would probably live on them. But they are fun. Many of you play for fun factors rather than winning factors. And if you can find such a game, have a good time.
All right, we're back with Mr. Yuck and Charles Hondy. Machine play includes slot machine progressive. Personally, I find slot machine progressives as interesting as watching paint dry, and less interesting as driving through Iowa. Now, even though I can earn some money playing them, I just can't bring myself to do it. How about you guys? Do you play slot machine progressives?
Very little, and it's more because I really haven't taken the time to figure out the strategy for them. And my sense is that it takes...
Bob's going and push the button as often as possible.
Well, what I mean by the strategy is how do I know if I'm playing a positive game or not? How high does the progressive have to be? And I honestly don't know how tedious of a process that could be. I have some ideas on how to do it. I just haven't taken the time to do it. And there's probably some opportunities there that maybe someday I'll explore.
Yeah, and we refuse to pay Peter Liston.
Well, those are kind of specific machines. But I will just say that I did some of that back, like, 35 years ago, and it was the worst form of gambling I have ever done in my life. I wanted to kill myself after we played for 7 hours. It was a bank, you know, and I had a friend that was all he was doing at the time was playing progressives, and he had a team of these octogenarians on Social Security that, you know, and back then it was worse because you had to feed the coins in manually and pull the handle. And it was just, I wanted to shove needles in my eyes. It was really horrible. I like the must-hit-by machines, though, because you know when it's going to be over. You know, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But even then, it's still horrible to just sit there and push the button.
Well, if it must-hit by 500 and you get on it at 499, yes. But
yeah.
It never happens that it's somebody left a machine at $4.99.
Yeah. Well, and that's the short version. It's must hit by 10,000, and, you know, you can sit there a long time on those machines.
Yeah. Well, you know, overseas, they're nice enough to allow you to put up a paper clip or a player's card and jam it in the hit button, and it just keeps perpetually playing the games for you. And you see people sitting back on those just watching three or four games going with paper clips jammed in the hit button in it. The machine's designed to just keep going. And, you know, I guess that's what, you know, one solution for that.
Using paper clips is an advantage play.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in Vegas, a lot of the video poker EV comes from drawings where you have to be, usually have to be there within 30 seconds or whatever it is, 3 minutes, something. You're road warriors. You cannot be in two different cities at 7 o'clock on a given Friday night. So most drawings you have to miss out on. Any thoughts on drawings? I mean, sometimes you're going to, presumably sometimes you show up for drawings, but what would be a drawing you'd show up for?
There's certain situations where maybe there's a point multiplier or something attached to the play that we've played for some other reason, and we'll be like, you know, we've gotten so much of the percentage of what would be in the barrel, whether it's a real barrel of, you know, tickets or virtual or whatever, that we feel like we might as well stay till Saturday because I think it's worth this much money to stick around town till Saturday from the multiplier we just racked up on Wednesday. And we know from looking on, you know, senior day on Wednesday, there wasn't a lot of competition for other people who were creating a lot of tickets, so we can estimate we have whatever value in there and decide whether it's worth sticking around for the particular drawing. But I will have to say, in general, we don't play as much at casinos that push most of their budget towards drawings because they can't do everything. And so if you have a casino that pushes a lot of money to drawings, it usually means they don't have a lot of money for you know, other things. And so it's hard to say for them what the optimal thing is because, you know, drawings tend to not necessarily attract the most profitable players. You get fleas that show up for drawings a lot of times, is what I see. So we tend to go to casinos that might, you know, have a different philosophy on where they want to put their marketing dollars.
You mentioned seniors. It did not occur to me that you two were over 50. Maybe you don't have to answer that, but I thought you were considerably younger than that.
Well, yeah, I'm just making... I guess what is popping into my mind there is a lot of multiplier times will be on like a Wednesday morning, and who's in the casino on Wednesday morning? It's mostly, you know, a lot of times senior citizens and things like that. So when I look around to see who else is here to do what, that's kind of like, to me, senior citizen time. And I don't see a lot of, and I see a lot of smaller play, and I don't see a lot of high dollar action at 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning. And that's where that kind of that thought's coming from.
There have actually been some drawings where I have gone out of my way to not win. I might be playing, the game I'm playing might be worth, I don't know, $100, maybe $200 an hour. But there's a drawing based on the amount of points, you get entries based on the amount of points you've earned from the time the casino opened that day. And if I'm there on a Wednesday morning and I'm betting, you know, $50 a hand and playing more than 1,000 hands an hour and everybody else is betting nickels, guess who's going to win all the drawings? And after I
won,
and if the casino wasn't smart enough to put in a restriction that you can only win once, I'm going to win all of them, and the EV from the drawing might only be about $10, and I'd rather just forego that $10 and not take the heat associated with winning all those drawings. So there have been plays where it's like, okay, I know the drawing's going to take place on the hour. I'm going to pull my card out of the machine and just stop playing 5 minutes before, wait till they do the drawing, and then resume the session.
Makes sense.
We've been talking to Charles Hondy and Mr. Yuck about machine play. If you like this, catch the June 15th podcast, where these same individuals talked about the way they attacked table game play. Thank both of you for being here. Go out and, thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.